Okay, let's bow for a word of prayer as we begin. Dear Heavenly Father, as we come to you, we thank you once again for being with us, for allowing us to assemble so freely, be able to study your word and how it fits into the creation that we see around us. We ask these things now in your precious name. Amen. Okay, we are going to be talking a little bit about the area of science and how it fits in and how the Bible fits in with this. And so to start with, I want to read from Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 to 6. Yeah, thank you. We had a little too much reverb there, so we're good shape now. Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Okay, we're going to take a look at several different aspects of the creation. We have the views of creation, and then one of the views of creation is young earth creation. So if you are a young earth creationist, what are some of the tenets that are involved with being a young earth creationist? Other than that, you're young. So, what are some of the things involved with young earth creation? Go ahead, Doug.
I think one of them was kind of like the earth is really only like 10 or 12,000 years.
Okay. So, obviously, we have the earth being younger than millions or billions of years. Okay. Any other things that are involved? Eric?
Complete worldwide destruction by the flood.
Okay, you had a complete worldwide destruction with the flood. This was a universal flood. Anything else that's involved with this? Another thing is that God's work was accomplished in 6 literal days. 6 days as we understand the days, if you want to call them solar days or whatever, but anyway, that God created in 6 days, and on the 7th day he rested. Anything else that you can think of? Okay, animals were created, and how did they reproduce? After their kind. Now, there were variations that came about, but we did not have animals that reproduced and developed all. We did not start out with one common animal that crept out of the ocean and then developed into all of the myriads of kinds of animals that we have today. So this would be the young earth creationism. Another thing is that how do humans fit with the animals? What's separate about the humans? What did God say when he created man? He created man in his own image. He did not create any of the animals in his own image. So he created man in his own image. So man was created separately, uniquely. And what was the purpose of man in this creation? We were supposed to have dominion, which means that we were supposed to rule with understanding over this. And so man was created separately to rule over the creation with understanding. We were not to abuse it. We were not to use it just for our own purposes, but that it was be something that was functional. Okay, how long has young earth creationism been a matter of belief among Christians? Okay, probably since Adam was born or Adam was created. However, if we think of this as far as the history of religion, history of creation of Christianity, The young earth creationism is the longest held view of how the earth was formed. The evolutionary philosophy came about with Darwin's time, shortly before Darwin's time. So we have something in the 16, 17, 1800s where the evolutionary philosophies, the old earth philosophies came about, but young earth creationism has been around for a long time. Okay, another view of creation is old earth creation. Okay, old earth creation is the idea that the earth is 4.5 billion years old, as the evolutionary scientists would say, and that this is being modified all of the time. It's being lengthened time after time after time. When I was in college, we were talking about the earth as being millions of years old, and now it's billions of years old. And I had a professor in college who said, we can't have the earth only being millions of years old. There's not enough time for all of the changes to take place that would have taken place from a creature crawling out of the ocean to all of the things that we have, all of the various species and types of animals that we have, at the rate with which mutations are occurring. They say that you are actually just a mutant from a frog or a mutant from a fish, and eventually you ended up kind of the way you are. So the young earth creationism is the longest held viewpoint. Old earth creation is that the earth is 4.5 billion years old, but that God did create life. God did create life, and somehow or other he miraculously directed the formation of all of the animals. And so he had some type of a direction, but we started out with just a blob of protoplasm that started in the ocean. Also then, with this, that Noah's flood was just a local flood, that it was not a flood over the entire earth. One of the reasons why young earth creationists say that the flood is universal is because the entire earth is basically covered in rock. Most of these rock are sedimentary rock. They have been formed by the flood, or by the reactions to the flood, volcanism and so on. Then we also have theistic evolution. Now, theistic evolution, theistic means what? God. All right, theistic is God. So theistic evolution would be that God directed this evolution. Okay, theistic evolution came about, somewhere in the late 1800s, early 1900s. They started talking about this and pushing this in some of the seminaries in the United States. Theistic evolution was being pushed because they said we have to take into consideration the findings of the scientists. And the findings of the scientists are true, but we have to somehow or other put God into this. Well, theistic evolution, using the term evolution, kind of turned some people off. They didn't like this. So another term that's being used is progressive creation. And progressive creation is exactly the same thing as theistic evolution, except that you use the term creation rather than evolution, but that also God somehow or other directed using evolutionary methods. Now, evolutionary methods are just by chance, things that occur by chance. So also that Noah's flood was mythological or just a local flood. Okay, then we have naturalistic evolution. This is what Darwin and some of his cohorts preached, and the idea, and all theistic or natural evolution goes from simple to complex. Now, if you're going to go from simple to complex, you're going to have to add information as you go along. If you take a look at an amoeba, some of the protozoans and so on, and you look at that and then compare that to animals or to humans, there's a lot more information that needs to be there to develop a human than there is to develop an amoeba. Now, if you don't remember the amoeba back from your freshman biology classes, the amoeba is just kind of a round blob of things that can kind of flow in every which direction. It has a little bit of information in it. It can reproduce, so on, but doesn't have any hair, doesn't have arms, it doesn't have eyes, legs, any of those types of things. So if you're going to go there, you're going to have to add information. So we have to add naturalistic evolution, has to add evolution information. So now, what is good science? These individuals say that they're scientists. The evolutionary individuals say they're scientists. So what is good science? Okay, we'll stay back here. One of the things in good science is that we have something called the scientific method. Now, I don't know if any of you remember back to high school when your teachers taught the scientific method, which can be excruciatingly painful and boring. But actually, it's not that way. You use the scientific method all of the time for a lot of things. And this is something that the scientist should do. Okay, so if you have we're going to use a rather simple illustration here. You are driving the car and it stops. All right, we're going to use the scientific method for figuring this out. First off, you have an observation. Your car stopped. All right? So now, what is the next thing that you are going to do? You're going to question why it stopped. All right? And so, what are you going to do after you question why it stopped? When I would ask this question in high school, and even in college, especially the girls would say, "Call my dad." So, anyway, what is the thing that you would do? Your vehicle has stopped.
Form a theory.
Pardon?
Form a theory.
Form a theory, okay. And what theory would you first form? You're in this car and it stopped. What theory are you going to form? We had an answer here someplace. Okay, out of gas. All right, so that's the first theory that you'd probably have. Now, I have had some people that would say I'd open up the trunk or I'd open up the hood, so on, but what are you going to do there? So most people probably say, I'm out of gas. E does not stand for enough. All right. So if your gas gauge is on E, that might be. So now you have a theory that you're out of gas. What's the next thing that you're going to do if you're using the scientific method? Pardon? You're going to test it. So how are you going to test this? Yes. Pardon? Okay. Probably get some gas, put some gas in. All right. You put some gas in. Yes, Lowell. Does your wife leave the car on empty? So, anyway, you would put some gas in, and if it starts, you have solved your problem. You've used the scientific method. You made an observation, you formed a hypothesis, you tested that hypothesis, it worked, and so now you can continue on. If you put gas in and it doesn't start, now you have to form a new hypothesis. And so you can go through this process all again. So that is the scientific method. And so the scientific method is something that should be used by scientists. So now when a scientist is going to use a scientific method, they would use this. Usually a scientist will have a controlled condition. A scientist will work in a laboratory where they can control things. They got the proper equipment. They've got everything there, and so they can test this. You go over to Mayo Clinic, and you see all of the testing that's being done for various things. A friend of mine is working in one of the labs, and they're working with a situation in which they're testing the proteins that will combine together to work on various situations. And he couldn't really tell me exactly, but he's working in this lab. He's a college student, just a college graduate, and he's just working there for 1 year on this type of thing. But they have they've got thousands, probably millions of dollars worth of equipment that they're working. They have sterile conditions that they're working with, so on. So anyway, we see that they have certain conditions that they have to work with. Now, with historical science, you have to have something that has either occurred in the past or that is occurring on a regular basis. For instance, we could do this. You go over to Quarry Hill in Rochester, and you start looking at the rocks there. What do you find in all of those rocks? All kinds of fossils. There's all kinds of shell fossils, and so on. So something happened. They're not living now. Something happened. And so you have to make some type of an analysis of what could have caused these fossils to form there. So we see that scientists will make a guess as to what happened, and then they will work on this and see whether this is plausible or whether this is possible. So we have the idea of, the dinosaur fossils, Tyrannosaurus rex. Tyrannosaurus rex was a truly humongous, fierce organism. What caused that organism that looked to be at the peak of the animal kingdom, what caused them all to die out? Well, you have to, with historical science, you have to be able to make a guess on this. But you have to have some basis on good science to be able to make a reasonable guess. So now, the creation of the physical universe. How does the scientist describe the formation of the physical universe? And we'll go back to Genesis chapter 1. And in Genesis chapter 1, we'll see what the Bible has to say about this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And he continues on with this, verse 14. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, the lesser light to rule the night. And so he had explains this. So now the world is here. So the scientist, using scientific method, is going to come up with, how did this happen? How did this world get here? Okay, so some of the things that they say happened is, one, you have the formation of a huge gas cloud. Okay, this huge gas cloud then collapsed on itself. And as it collapsed on itself, and this is because of the laws of gravity, that this would collapse on itself. And so then it collapsed, and then it started to spin for some reason or other. No explanation of why it started to spin, but it started to spin. Then as it was spinning, particles were thrown off, and these particles went on out, and they started to spin also. And those form the planets that we have going around the sun. So most of this gas cloud ended up in being the sun. The rest of the gas cloud ended up in making the rest of the planets. But now again, you have two things that are involved here. One is you have gravity, and the other one is you have centripetal force, or centrifugal force. What is centrifugal force? David knew what centrifugal force was. Okay, he was twirling his sling. Remember, David didn't use a sling like this. He used a sling like this, centrifugal force there. And when he let go of one of those strings, that rock went on out and struck Goliath in the head. Okay, so centrifugal force tends to do what to objects that are in motion? This is not hard. It spews them out. It spreads them on out. Okay? Gravity will bring things together. This is one of the reasons why you don't fly off into space. Some of us have less of a problem of flying off into space because we have gravity that's holding us down onto the Earth. And so the gravity is holding us on here. But the scientist says that centrifugal force was involved, but gravity was also involved in pulling these particles together to form the planets. Well, we have several problems with this explanation of how the physical universe was formed. What's the first obvious problem that we have with this? Where did the gas come from? Okay. We have no explanation of where the gas came from. There is an eminent scientist, or he was an eminent scientist, he died quite a few years ago, by the name of Hoyle. And Hoyle came up with the idea, that's very simple to explain where the gas came from. It's just out there, and it just keeps coming all the time. And so we have this gas that's coming from who knows where, and it's coming on through and continuing on out. But you know, that's not a really very good explanation of where the gas came from. And so this is one of the things that they have a problem with. Another thing is that gas clouds usually expand rather than collapse, all right? You have an odor. You open up something in the kitchen that has, pretty rank smell for some reason or other. Does that quickly go back into the bottle? No, it spreads on out, and it spreads out as it goes. So gases tend to spread out. They do not collapse on themselves. Another little problem that we have is that there's a few planets that are rotating in the opposite direction. Not all the planets are rotating the same way. So if you're just throwing this stuff on out, everything should be rotating in the same direction. Now, we also have something that's called the Big Bang Theory. And the Big Bang Theory is the idea, it's just a little bit more complicated than what we have here, that we have this mass that gave, it was just immeasurably dense. With the Big Bang Theory, they say that the mass was so dense that you could take the Earth and stick it into a quart jar. It would still weigh the same thing as what the Earth is, but there's that much space in the atoms and so on that make up the Earth that if you collapsed all of that space, you could cram this all into a quart jar. Well, then these particles finally got sick and tired of each other. You have positive ions and you have negative ions there. Positive and negative ions, they like each other, but you have a whole bunch of positive. What happens when you take two magnets and you put the two poles together, the two north poles or the two south poles together? They spread apart. Okay, the same thing with our atoms. We have all these positive ions. They just finally got sick and tired of each other, so they just exploded, and that gave us this Big Bang. So now, if we're talking about this as far as science is concerned, is this good science? Well, things that I've just been explaining to you. Obviously, no. Why is this not good science? Yes. Pardon? Okay, you can form a hypothesis, but you can't test it. So if you can't test it, you can't say that this is true. Any other things that we have here that show that this is not good science? Yes, Eric.
The model that they propose doesn't explain important things.
Okay, so anyway, we're not explaining what happened here. We are just kind of continuing on with pushing things back further and further and further to answer these things. So we're...
Like, for example, like, you know, gravity is formed by mass.
Okay, right.
And then based on what you were saying earlier, where did gravity come from?
Okay.
In the beginning, where did gravity come from?
All right.
If there was nothing massive yet.
Okay, very good.
So those kind of questions aren't explained.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, science should be asking questions and proving or disproving them, and we are not doing that. Then we see biological evolution. And with biological evolution, we have in Genesis chapter 1, verse 20, and God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas and let the birds multiply on the earth. There was evening and there was morning the fifth day. And then we see that God said in verse 26, let us make man in our image after our likeness and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens. So we have biologic evolution. Okay, biological evolution starts out with this. You start out with an atom. Okay, there are 92 naturally occurring kinds of elements in the world. Gas, oxygen, helium, iron, gold, all of these are individual atoms. These individual atoms existed someplace, and again, there's no explanation of where they existed or how they came into existence, but then they come together, and as they come together, they now form molecules. You have something which is called dihydrogen oxide. Most of you know that as water. But you have two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom. They come together and they form this substance called water. And so the evolutionary biologist would say that somehow or other they just came together and they formed these substances. These substances now form much larger atoms or much larger molecules. You have the molecules that make up proteins and fats and carbohydrates and all of these types of things. Some of these molecules are huge. They're humongous. One of the reasons why the names on some medicines are so very long is because they are trying to combine all of the different components that are in there into that particular name. But you have all kinds of smaller molecules that come together to form larger molecules. And so we say the evolutionist says that things just kind of came together and they happened to bump into each other. One oxygen happened to bump into two hydrogens, said, hi, how are you doing? And he said, fine, I'd like to hang out with you. And presto zippo, we've got water. So anyway, this is how the explanation continues. And so things continue to evolve in this way. They ended up with more diversity and more variety as these organisms all came together. Now here again, we have some problems. The first problem, and we've already discussed this several times, and that is, where did the molecules or atoms come from? We have no explanation with evolutionary biological evolution. where all of these things came from. There's one other thing that is very critical. What is the difference between the atoms that are in a, or we'll say the molecules that are in a glass of water and the molecules that are in me? What's one of the obvious differences? I hope it's obvious. One word? Pardon? Okay, all right, they do that, but there's one obvious difference. One word. Life. Okay, where did life come from? Biological evolution has absolutely no explanation of how life formed or how life came into being in this primordial ocean that had these things floating around in it. So we see this, and then we also see that the scientists have not been able to come up with life. Now, you'll hear this every once in a while. They'll talk about this, that scientists have discovered life. No, they didn't. The only thing that they discovered was that they could take atoms and put them together to form molecules, and these molecules could be protein molecules. But never have they been able to make these protein molecules reproduce themselves, living molecules. So there's never been any explanation for this. So the biological evolution is going to mean that you're going to go from simple to complex, so you're going to have to add information as you go along. You're constantly having to add information. If you look at yourself and compare yourself to a walleye, catfish, anything like that, you know that you're much more complex than some of these animals are. Where did this complexity come from? How did this form? Okay, the biological evolutionist says, well, it just kind of happened. Okay, but they have no actual evidence. This is not science when they say these things. I usually made an assignment when I was teaching, and we had a section on the textbooks that I used were secular textbooks. And in the chapter on evolution, I would always have them go through, and I'd always have them underlined the could-bes, maybes, think-so, possibly, so on. And you have two, three of these words in every sentence as they're explaining how things occurred. So we see that they really don't have any explanation of how things became more more complex. So one of the things that we have seen, and that is that things are becoming less hardy, less diverse. They're getting smaller and smaller. Fossils that we have are huge. There are some huge fossils that we have around. And so this shows that life is not getting better, bigger, more complex, but it's now we are coming up with more technology. But as far as the organisms are concerned, they are becoming less and less complex. Now, we have individual characteristics that are mixed up, and so you'll have different variations. I came up with, I thought was a brilliant idea the other day. I had to fill out a form, and it said race on there. Now, most of the time I've put down white, and after all of the time that I've spent talking about the fact that there's only one race, I put down human. So we'll see what happens with that. So anyway, we have the organisms are not getting bigger and bigger. They are getting smaller and smaller. So we have one example here. This is an example, and Scott Schultz brought me a couple of skulls here, and you've all been wondering what these skulls are here for. Okay, this is the American bison, all right? This is a bison which he shot with an arrow. And so anyway, this is a very nice bison. Pretty impressive skull, so it's pretty good size. Okay, that is the picture I have there is a picture of a fossil bison. These were found in Texas, Nebraska, Oklahoma. Those horns are 7 feet wide, tip to tip. That bison weighed probably half again as much as this bison did. And what happened to it? It didn't survive. That bison being, and so we're getting down to this puny little bison here, and they were getting smaller and smaller. So organisms are not getting bigger and better all the time, but they are getting smaller. Another example, and these pictures are compliments of a friend of mine who is one of my students. He is kind of the Ken Ham of Canada. Vance Nelson is his name. And so he has he does a lot of this type of thing. And he goes around to schools and does a lot of homeschool work and shows these things. He's got a trailer full of fossils that he brings and sets up. This is a turtle. This is a fossil turtle that was, they found some of them in Europe, in India, and Thailand. This turtle is 11 feet long and 6 feet wide. Now you've got a average-sized human that is standing next to that turtle there. And again, this was a fossil turtle. The giant snapping turtles that you've seen now probably get to be about 5-6 feet in length at most. Tom would probably be a better source on that, but they aren't nearly this size. Another example that we have here of a fossil is this is a fossil beaver skull. Now, the one that we have here is a normal-sized beaver. This is the fossil beaver that we have. This beaver was about 6 feet tall and about 8 feet long, and I'm not sure what the size of the tail would have been. That didn't fossilize. But anyway, it was much, much bigger than anything that we have today. Another thing that's interesting on this, and this is how God designed this, this beaver does not have these brown stains from smoking. Those brown stains are a special part of the tooth that is much harder than the rest of the tooth. And so a beaver's teeth continue to grow throughout its entire lifespan. This is the same thing with rodents. Rodents, mice, rats, and so on, their teeth keep on growing. So the front part is much harder than the back part, so as they keep gnawing away, the back part erodes away faster. It's a self-sharpening tooth. Steel did not invent self-sharpening blades. All right, this is a self-sharpening tooth that the beavers have. But anyway, we see that the example here, how much larger that beaver used to be. Now, this is the crowning picture that I have here. And this is a picture of the Cape buffalo. And this is also compliments of Scott. This is an example of a Cape buffalo. This is one of the five animals that are called the big five in Africa. If you are out hunting and you get one of these, that's one of the big five. This is also called the Black Death. They have an amazing memory, an amazing sense of smell. And they more people are killed in Africa by the Cape buffalo than are killed by lions because they can remember who it was that was trying to shoot them by the smell. And the next time you come around, that may be it. So anyway, so we have this Cape buffalo, which is actually, it's not quite the same thing as the American bison. It's a little different species. It is very similar to the water buffalo of India and the southeast area and so on. But anyway, this Cape buffalo, pretty good sized, but the Cape buffalo that we have in the fossils, we see that, again, we're talking about horns that are about 7 feet wide. How wide are these tables? Are they 8 feet? I think they're 8 feet tables. Okay, so you add another 5 feet onto this for the horns, and even Scott probably wouldn't be out hunting after them. So anyway, so what do we see here? We see that animals and organisms and so on have not been getting better and bigger and more complex. They have been decreasing in size because the earth, sin entered into the earth, and we have sin entering in and causing the demise and death of animals, not the origin. We have no new species that have come up. We've crossed some species and come up with something, but we have no new species. So we see here that the whole creation, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth and all that was in them. Any comments or questions that we have? Yes, Eric.
Is a much finer and smaller distinction between animal types than like the kinds of animals.
Okay.
Created as them from the creation.
Okay.
It's like the modern classification of biological organisms, it's like the family stage.
Right.
Probably the closest to the created kind.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Species, as the scientist defines it, is not the same thing as kinds in the Bible. Kind, as he said, is more like the family, the groupings. For instance, the dog family. So you have coyotes, wolves, foxes, so on. They would all be one kind. All of the information that's necessary to come up with everything from a Great Dane to a foo-foo dog is all in those genetics there, but they're all the same species. Okay, thank you, and you are dismissed.